Tänään Radio Helsingin Safkiksessa puhutaan amerikkalaisesta olut- ja ruokakulttuurista. Ja enkä aio tästä yksin puhua, vaan minulla on täällä ihan pääkallopaikalta vieraita, joten käännämme puheen englanniksi. Good morning, Herr Linda and Tara.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Aniko. So good to see you again.
Yeah. So we have in the studio, we have beer journalist and beer and food judge Herr Linda Heras.
Cheers.
And then beer journalist and author Tara Nurin.
Kipis.
And you both are really experienced with the beer and food kind of industry and scene in the States. Let's start by kind of analyzing what is happening now with beer in the States.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say this, but beer has lost some of its cool, to be honest. Spirits have sort of overtaken beer as far as cool factor goes. And it's funny to me as a Gen Xer, some of the younger people think that craft beer is their dad's beer, you know, whereas when we were coming up, it was like the coolest thing going, right?
Yeah. When all the companies, the big companies, were getting excited about, you know, buying beer. When I first started the show 10 years ago, Brouhaha, a live broadcast radio show in Sonoma County, California, where I live, about an hour north of San Francisco. I mean, like, you know, remember, like, all the banks were coming to, like, the Rate Beer Festival I helped with, and they were like, you know, who can we, you know, invest in? Who wants to climb on board? And then now things have changed a lot. But the big story... you know, like I said, I live near San Francisco, where Anchor Brewing was started 127 years ago, a flagship brewery, iconic. Mark Carpenter was the head brewer for 45 years, was my co-host on Brouhaha for a while, still a good friend, and it closed on Sunday after 127 years. Sapporo had bought them, and they closed them, which I was really surprised, and...
I think that's a sad news for Finland as well, because many people who are, I mean, not even beer enthusiastic, but I mean, know about beer or drink beer, different kind of beers, they know the Anchor beers.
Yeah, and the history, like some of my friends like from Poland and Lithuania and even in Finland have told me that one of their first American craft beers was Anchor, because they got out, you know, they weren't big, but they did do a good job of getting into... countries after Poland told us after when they became more free and independent, that they have fond memories of having Anchor as one of their first, you know, beers. So, I mean, you see it like in the Japan Times and on, you know, BBC and everywhere when Anchor announced this. It's big news.
It's really so sad, because not only is it old, it's considered the father of craft brewing, because as some of your listeners probably know, a gentleman named Fritz Maytag bought it in 1965 as it was about to go out of business, and so he turned it into this independently owned brewery, and then all the craft breweries started after that. It was a good while, a decade or so later, that another Northern California brewery opened as the first ground-up craft brewery. New Albion post-prohibition, but really, Anchor was the first.
Yeah, and then some of the other big breweries, like, you know, probably know Sierra Nevada, which is very famous, and other ones. Fritz was very generous about buying, when they would do a big malt buy or something like that, that they could buy in volume, and then they would go ahead and let these other smaller breweries come in and buy some malt also with this bigger order. And it saved them money, and they all became really good friends.
Yeah. And might have really created this ethos that craft beer is known for, where it's so cooperative.
Yes.
Right? There wasn't an early Northern California craft brewer, I mean, they were all in Northern California back in the day, who didn't go and visit Anchor and pick Fritz's brain before they opened.
Yeah. And they cheer for each other. Yeah. I mean, breweries tend to, I think that the same way in Finland, where they cheer for each other. And when the big breweries were coming in and buying things and closing them out, you know, everybody was trying to help take care of each other. But, then Sapporo ended up buying Stone Brewing, which was huge news. and they had closed in Berlin and, you know, some in Napa, where I, you know, near where I live. And what they really wanted to do was brew their Sapporo lager, and that has become more of the focus. And so closing Anchor was, I don't think it's something that, I don't think they, when they bought it, that was, the Japanese revere history. And I've met many of them at different events. I definitely do not think this is what their plan mm-hmm. was when they bought it. But it, I mean, a lot of small breweries are closing like crazy that we don't hear about.
Yeah, but that's what I was saying, that is it this a trend now that, I mean,
is that
because we
Finland?
See that in Finland and mm-hmm. we see that in Europe as well, because craft beer, it's kind of a... I mean, it's not rising so much anymore, but is it the same in the States?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, not as many craft breweries closed because of the pandemic as mm-hmm. was expected, which is great. Mm-hmm. But what you have seen for a while is these older, more established, more regional, national craft breweries either closing or getting bought. Mm-hmm. And so some of them are doing really well. New Belgium was bought by a multinational, and that's doing great. But that's how they have to survive at this point. And what you also see with some of the smaller craft breweries opening in the states where it's allowed, a lot of satellite tap rooms. So the tap rooms are doing really well.
Yeah,
that's where
food.
The bright spot is.
Yeah.
So, beer and food is getting bigger, I mean, with the tap rooms then.
Right. I think the food really saves them. Russian River Brewery, I remember Natalie doing a talk, because I live between both Russian Rivers, their big newer brewery, and their kind of flagship tap room, where their second brewery was, because the first brewery really was at a winery, Corbel. But I remember Natalie doing a talk about how having their pizza kitchen really helped them get going when they were starting, and having food. And I think that actually is probably something that is helping some of these other ones. And the food trucks, like, whose food truck is at which place is a big thing in California. I don't know about in, like, Jersey and Philly or Finland.
But. It has been. Although, to be honest, not to get too specific, but New Jersey, where I live, which is between New York and Philadelphia, we have terrible tasting room laws, and we are not allowed to have food trucks at
That's
our breweries,
so
which
dumb.
Is
oh, okay.
insanity. But most states are.
But what kind of food do you sell? I mean, what kind of food is trendy now?
Well, the taco trucks always do really well, especially in California, but I bet they would do really well in Europe. We're lucky because California has a lot of great Mexican food. Also, the barbecue is doing well. The Asian food, like banh mi's and Vietnamese food are doing well. We have a Dino's Greek food truck that does well. Joy's Jam Bungalow, who does all kinds of like Asian California fusion. People are kind of going a little bit lighter, a little bit healthier. Of course, the, you know, gluten and all that kind of stuff is a big thing, even though it's like, okay, I'll take my dose of gluten and beer and I'll save it on the food.
How about the beer styles then? I mean, what kind of beer styles are trendy now in the States? I mean, in Finland and in Europe, I would say that still the kind of hazy IPAs are very trendy, and then the sour beers. And of course, I mean, the pilsners and the lagers are always trendy, but
lagers are getting a lot more popular.
Okay.
Sours aren't as popular. Rare Barrel closed. Which was a really amazing high-end sour, barrel-aged sours in Berkeley, kind of near San Francisco. Cellar Maker ended up taking over that spot, which has been really good. But I'm so glad West Coast IPAs are back again.
Oh, they are coming back,
big
actually.
Time.
That's the...
Oh, yeah.
I was just
and
gonna,
lagers. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, the past few years, I haven't seen a lot of change in what styles are popular, because IPAs are still every bit as dominant. The hazies, mm-hmm. the smoothies. Well, I think the smoothie sours are still big.
Yeah, not in California.
Oh, okay. And definitely lagers are increasing. But the new thing is actually that West Coast IPAs are coming
Thank
back.
You,
and they're branding
Lord.
As West Coast IPA.
And I live on the West Coast, the best coast.
I will have to agree with you on that, even though I'm on the other coast. Yeah. I'm very much East
yeah.
Coast.
And Pliny the Elder is still super popular, of course, double IPA and Pliny the Younger. But it's also such good quality, like whatever Vinny does, they're super good quality. But I think the places that are doing really stellar, super high quality are, except for with like the exception, like something like Rare Barrel, which had it was such a niche, you know, with the sour.
How about then the ABV level? Because I mean, in Finland and in Europe, we see a lot of like rising and declining, because I mean, we have a lot of like triple and even double IPAs, but then we have a lot of beers which is like ABV level is 3 point something.
Session beers, yeah.
I will say that I think we are not in almost any way trending upward. It's more downward. I did forget to say what is not trending, speaking of higher ABV, is Belgians. Belgians don't sell well at all in the States anymore, at least not where I am. And
she's on the East Coast and I'm on the West Coast. So she's closer to New York, Philadelphia area. And then, of course, I'm San Francisco on California. So we are on completely opposite sides of a very big country.
Yeah, you're good. Getting it's a wide, wide perspective. Yeah. What is finally really starting the trend in the United States that's been more dominant in Europe for a longer period of time is low and no alcohol.
Yeah.
Beer primarily, but also we are starting to get a lot of NA spirits and even some NA wine. And I don't know, have you tasted any decent NA wine? Have you?
Because no.
I haven't. It's all been terrible so far. But the spirits and the beer are definitely getting better.
Yeah, I have my friend Tiffany has a sober drinking in wine country Instagram page. And so she tries a lot of the non-alcoholic wines, non-alcoholic beers, but so she posts about like what she thinks are, you know, better ones and stuff, but until I have to.
But so it's the same kind of in Europe. I mean, this so-called sober curious trend is mm-hmm. spreading partly, I think, because of health trends and partly because of people don't want to get drunk anymore.
Well, in California, cannabis recreational is legal. And a lot of people put their money into that as well. You know, we have like we have beautiful dispensaries, like, you know, the gummies and the edibles and cannabis drinks. The cannabis drink category is huge. Gwyneth Paltrow, I just found out, is invested in my favorite one that does like these roadies. It's called Cann, C-A-N-N. And thank God, so hopefully it sticks around because that's a really great one. And Kiva, there's some big corporations that started in San Francisco doing cannabis. But New Jersey, where you live, just became recreational. Are you seeing, right. What are you seeing over there?
I haven't seen the drinking go down, but there are a good number of states now where recreational cannabis is legal. So yes, at first I didn't think it was cutting into alcohol sales, but now I think that it is. I think that just even generationally, mm-hmm. Gen Z isn't drinking as much anymore. They're not all smoking pot, but or eating pot or yeah. drinking pot, as the case may be. But there's an expression in the States, maybe you've heard, called Cali sober, which is somebody who doesn't drink. But they smoke a lot of pot.
We don't really smoke as much. Yeah.
I'm old. I still say consume a lot of cannabis.
We do a lot of drinks.
Sober, yeah, right.
How about then the hot seltzer, which was a huge trend like a couple of years ago?
Not so much. It had its moment. I'm actually surprised at how quickly it has fallen. And you do have a decent number of breweries that did expand their offerings and start making seltzer.
Not to mention
distilling spirits also in the states where it's legal, because, you know, alcohol laws vary a lot state by state. Mm-hmm. But yeah, seltzer had a hot second, but it's still around, but sales have fallen a lot.
Yeah, you're seeing more the craft ones doing pretty well. My friend from Flora Luna just partnered with Crooked Groat Brewing in Petaluma, California, to do a craft one where she does handcrafted bitters and syrups. Mm-hmm. So she's doing one with them with like ginger and stuff. But hard kombuchas are still doing very well. They actually are not low alcohol like you would think. They're still like about 7%.
Wow.
Yeah. But people, I helped curate the beverage list for a lounge, a comedy club called Barrel Proof Lounge. And I was fighting like getting the hard kombucha, and our bartender's like, no, I love this stuff. It's one of our top sellers, Butchcraft. It was like amazing.
And finally, how about ciders?
Ciders are still doing well, especially with the gluten-free crowd in California. But we also do really good ciders in California. Mm. They are still pretty big. Our Golden State Cider sells really well, Tilted Shed Cider.
Yeah, nationally, no, it's a blip.
It hasn't gotten bought.
Yeah, it hasn't gained a lot of traction yet. I mean, maybe it will, but I don't see the sales performing all that well.
I just helped arrange the American Cider Association Palmier exam for their like second tier, kind of like a sommelier, and that's going to be in San Francisco August 13th. And that's actually got a we've got a pretty good list of people taking the, but they're wanting to know more. They're wanting to be better at it. Cider and food, and cider and cheese, and fatty meats and things are so good. Finland has fantastic ciders.
Yes, we do.
And you'll
have to introduce me to some.
We have to have some.
Yeah. You hear both Herlinda and Tara to judge the Sahti competition, but also Tara, you have a book. A Woman's Place is in the Brew House, which is about the women's history in beer.
Yes.
And you have a couple of promotions here as well. But tell me a little bit about your book.
Sure. Well, you are in it.
As you should be.
As one of the resident experts on Finnish beer. So I have a whole chapter devoted to Northern Europe, and Finland plays a starring role in it because I was lucky enough to be here in 2019. So I got to meet you then and interview people and learn about Sahti for sort of the first time.
Kaisa.
And spend the day in sauna with Sahti Kaisa. Mm-hmm. And so that's fun for anybody here in Finland. But more generally, the book chronicles, as you said, the history of women in brewing, and looks at how since we were hunter-gatherers in Africa 200,000 years ago, it's believed that women were the brewers and have continued to be throughout societies for all those thousands of years until every single time and every single place, either the forces of capitalism, economics, religion, or politics,
patriarchy
came in and basically replaced women in the brew house or the, you know, kitchen with men. And now, I mean, definitely in the States, and I think pretty much globally, I'm not sure specifically in Finland how gendered beer is, but
pretty gendered.
You know, there will be a female brewery owner or head brewer or something, and she's still, you know, somebody will walk up to her at a festival and direct their questions to, you know, like the
bar 22-year-old back next to her
dude, right? So it's still a battle we're very much fighting.
Yeah, the book also is the first global history of women in beer, which is pretty interesting. Like, there have been some, you know, different, you know, smaller things here and there, but this goes all the way from like Mesopotamia and you know, the famous Ninkasi, but also I like how it's a woman's place in the brew house, a forgotten history of alewives, brewsters, witches, and CEOs. Such so cool.
So Herlinda and I, Herlinda is my best, I don't know, everything when it comes to the book, photographer, publicist.
So, I mean, this is your second time in Finland, Tara and Herlinda. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to ask because everybody is always asking. I mean, what do you like in Finland? How do you like Finland?
I like Finland a lot. I love the people I have met. I love the Sahti tradition, actually. We had some great food last night. Mm-hmm. But Herlinda told me yesterday she would move here if it weren't for one thing. What was the thing?
It's expensive. And maybe I might need a visa. I know. But I think they'd let me come stay because I love Finland so much. I am a big cheerleader for Finland. People actually even know when they like have somebody come work with them, they'll send me, look who's here, and they want to talk to me about, you know, people want to, like, from Finland in America want to talk about it, or who've been here, like, oh, you've been there. And I love that it's I always tell people it's the most equitable country in the world that I've been to so far. You know, clean air, clean water. You're all about equality. I loved your former prime minister. I'm blanking on her name right now.
Sanna Marin.
Thank you. I know things are changing a little bit, and I'm concerned about that because you guys have been so much about protecting this beautiful country that you, even though you're in the, like, Helsinki is a big city, but we both have been fortunate to get out into the countryside. And like the Sahti competition I judged 2 years ago was in Jämiväri.
Jämijärvi.
Yeah. And like all these lakes and trees and the sauna culture and tradition.
That's
is
really
so
fun. I love
that. Fun. I can't wait to get to our friends and get in the sauna and roast and then jump in a cold lake, which they had to talk me into the first time. And now I can't wait to do it. When I tell people, they really do cut a hole in the ice and jump in it in the winter after. They're like, what?
If the listeners want to know more about you, where they can follow you on social media, YouTube, where?
I am Tara Nurin. T-A-R-A-N-U-R-I-N, basically everywhere. That's my website, www.taranurin.com, and on the social platforms. Mm-hmm. You can find me on my under my name.
I still, on like on the different iTunes podcasts and things, you can find Brewhaha, B-R-E-W-H-A-H-A, and it'll say with Herlinda Ross and then either Harry Duke or Mark Carpenter, who was the head brewer anchor for 45 years. And I have a new YouTube channel, Beer Golf Girl Travels, which is video. So I'll be doing some video here in Finland and as well. But I have some interviews with Mark Carpenter and Bob Brewer from Anchor on their feelings about the closure and different things happening over there with Anchor. Admiral Maltin, I'll be doing more and more on that. Mm-hmm. So that's Beer Golf Girl Travels. And then my name is spelled Herlinda, H-E-R-L-I-N-D-A. Last name is H-E-R-A-S. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and Beer Golf Girl on, well, what used to be Twitter, and now it's X. I don't know what the heck is going
Whatever.
On there.
Twitter.
the twit that bought the
We're
X.
Sorry for him, about him, world.
Well, luckily, yeah. I was going to say, he's not I'm an American, sorry. But he sure is messing
A
with
doofus.
Things.
Yeah.
So, but thank you. I mean, this was like really nice, and we learned a lot.
I'm so excited to be back in Finland. I can't even tell you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cheers, everybody.